Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with four Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. Hey, Trey Kay here. And from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX, this is Us and Them, the show that tells the stories about the things that divide us. Recently, a friend approached me with an idea for an Us and Them episode. Now, I gotta tell you, I get dozens of ideas pitched to me all the time, and usually, well, let's just say that a lot of them don't pan out. But this one was an exception. It's a story about music and race during the explosive year of 1968. And it's a story about taking a stand. And at the center of this story is a bass player named John Smith and his Charleston, West Virginia band called The In Crowd, and a chapter of the American Federation of Musicians Union.
We want to say good morning, good evening, afternoon to each and every one of you. We're glad that you could come out for this special day for our friend and brother, John Smith. Amen?
Amen.
That's Reverend James Jackson, pastor of the Levi Baptist Church in Rand, West Virginia. The friend who told me about this story also contacted the local musicians union. And that brought us all to this small church just outside of Charleston. Okay, by now you've got to be wondering, what the heck happened back in 1968? I mean, you already know that it was a year of turbulent protests over the Vietnam War and civil rights, and the assassinations of Robert F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. But in 1968, a band called The In Crowd had a gig at a West Virginia nightclub, the Charleston Athletic Club. The four-piece, all-black band played the popular hits of the day, funk, soul, R&B, and they took their name from a song that was made popular by the Ramsey Lewis Trio. Now, that musicians union that I mentioned, Michael Pushkin is now the local chapter's president. And he steps up to the church lectern to acknowledge something that happened more than 50 years ago.
I think it's significant that we're here together in 2021 acknowledging an incident that happened in 1968. They were playing at the Athletic Club downtown Charleston on the boulevard, right? And there was a black man dancing with a white woman. The club owner kicked him out of the bar, and the band did the right thing. The band did the brave thing. They didn't do the easy thing. The easy thing would have been to keep playing, but they didn't. They stopped playing and said, they can't dance, we're not gonna play.
The In Crowd was made up of Tommy Hill on vocals, Bob Thomas on drums, and McDonald Carey on the organ. John Smith, who played bass, is the only surviving member of the band. The group's decision to take a stand against racism that night in 1968 had consequences. The club owners weren't pleased. They had patrons who wanted to dance, and they told the band, either play or pack up your gear and get out.
And what I learned today is something that we need to acknowledge is that I thought that they filed a grievance with their union, the union that I'm here representing, the American Federation of Musicians, Local 136, the union called the band in and fined them for not playing.
Each member of the in-crowd was fined $150. That may not sound like much today, but if you adjust that amount for inflation, today that would be about $1,200. And that was a significant hit for each member. Plus, they lost their best opportunity for consistent work.
Learning the extent of this debt, like, I have to acknowledge that. The band did the right thing. And the union that was supposed to be there fighting for them and representing them, they were on the wrong side of history. So I thank Joe again for bringing us here, bringing us to our attention. And we're here to acknowledge it and to honor Mr. Smith for what was for doing the right thing.
If that don't make you want to go, sister, if that don't make you want to go to heaven, I don't know what does.
Pushkin says to move ahead, it's vital to acknowledge the past. He steps down to the first row of the church pews where John Smith and his wife Barbara are sitting.
We're here to admit the mistakes and acknowledge it, but I can't say we're here to make things right, because you can't make that right. Because I truly believe that, you know, justice deferred is justice denied.
Yes.
So we're just here to acknowledge it and not to make things right, but to reaffirm that you were right. Mm-hmm. And you stood on the right side of history. And we can all see that now. Mm-hmm. So you were right, and the rest of your band was right. And the union that should have been representing you was wrong, and incredibly wrong in what they did. So what we're here to do today is reinstate Mr. Smith into the union. This is a certificate of reinstatement. That's a certificate of reinstatement. This is a union card, and most importantly, this is a check, because to make it right, we got to pay you back. And I wish it could be adjusted for the rate of inflation. It's slightly adjusted. It's more than what was fined. I wish it could be completely adjusted for the rate of inflation, but this is a check to pay you back what the union took from you.
Well, I would like to thank everyone, especially like to thank the Musicians Union. I truly do appreciate what you've done. And it's like you said, it's impossible to make it up to the band now, because I'm the only survivor. And it's like F.O. Douglas said one time in a speech back in, I think it was about 1884 or 85. If I forget those that are in bondage, may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth and my left hand lose its cunning.
Yes.
Now, it's hard to hear Mr. Smith's remarks. He's far away from my microphone, and because of COVID, he's wearing a mask. But he reminds everyone that he's the only survivor of the in-crowd. And to acknowledge his late bandmates, he paraphrases Frederick Douglass. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do forget, and I do not faithfully remember those bleeding children of sorrow this day, may my right hand forget her cunning, and may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. I spoke about this with my co-producer, Kyle Vass. He told me about a recent conversation he had with Pastor David Friesen. Friesen's first career was playing in bands. He started out when he was just 11 years old.
Hey, David.
Yes.
Hey, it's Kyle.
Pastor David Friesen is a retired university vice president, an ordained minister, and a political activist. But before he was any of those things, he was a fifth grader with a drum kit left behind by his older brother.
So when he went to the service at 17, some of the high school guys came by and said, "Well, you have a set of drums. Can you play them?" And I said, "I could." So I started playing in bands when I was 11 at these speakeasies and all that. And it was wild and crazy.
By the time Friesen was in high school, he was making a steady paycheck.
And I'll never forget, I got my first paycheck from playing all that week. It was $125, which was actually more than my father made.
Like John Smith, Friesen was a member of the Musicians Union, but he had to leave after a few years. Friesen says the head of the union, the same guy that would go on to fine Smith and the other members of the in crowd, was known for his temper.
And I love him like a family member, you know, but if anybody knew him, they'd say, "Well, Ned was Ned," you know, and he ruled with an iron fist. So he had gotten into a dispute with this club owner. And he told the band they could either lose their union membership or they had to stop playing there. And so they decided not to stop playing there. And so I had to kind of, when I started playing there, I kind of had to resign from the union because I would have been considered a scab playing in this non-union club.
Oh, because this is a non-union club?
Yeah. I mean, and I'm like in the eighth grade. I mean, come on, I'm in the eighth grade.
Just outside of his home recording studio, there are pictures of all the lives he's lived so far. When we get to the wall dedicated to his music career, there's a picture of one of his old bands, Ebony and the Greek. Everyone in the band is black except for the keyboard player.
We were Ebony, and that was the Greek. Louis Stanley was his name. He was bad. He was funky, man. I mean, he was really funky.
Friesen says racism was and still is prevalent at every level of American life. But he says in the 1960s, popular music was decades ahead of the rest of the country when it came to race.
I often chide my Christian brothers and sisters that the rock scene was much farther along in terms of integration than the church. So, as you know, Martin Luther King said the church, 11 o'clock Sunday morning hour is the most segregated time in America. Well, Saturday nights at these clubs were probably the most integrated.
Friesen mostly plays at church these days. He sits down to a keyboard.
It really pushed the country towards integration, unlike anything else that we did in America. I mean the music scene, the Motown and the Stax, and because suddenly you had these white kids coming from white communities and white homes now had an entree into the African-American experience through the groups. So I truly believe that the music scene was one of the reasons that the color lines were broken down, which makes an incident such as you are alluding to even more kind of difficult and noteworthy. Had it been any other place, had this happened at the baseball field or had it happened at the race car, it probably wouldn't have been that memorable, but it was memorable because it was within the context of the music scene.
Coming up after a break, we'll hear more from John Smith about that night back in 1968. And we'll listen in as local musicians talk about how race continues to play a role in their lives today. That's after a break. You're listening to Us and Them. This program is supported in part by the West Virginia Humanities Council and the CRC Foundation.
Music lifts us up and brings us together, even when we can't get together in person. Mountain Stage brings you live performances on the air, online, and in our podcast. They remind you how it feels to be in a live audience listening to live music. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find a link to our stations and our podcast online at mountainstage.org.
Hey, it's Trey, and you're listening to Us and Them from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX. The story of John Smith and the events at the Charleston Athletic Club is a classic tale of an individual standing up against the forces of institutional racism. And sadly, it's just one example of the American civil rights struggles of the late 1960s. But if you dig a little deeper, you'll discover there's more to John Smith's story than just an act of personal protest. To get the full story, to get the full picture, we decided to go straight to the source and ask John Smith to take us back to that time and place, the nightclub scene of Charleston, West Virginia in 1968. And to make Mr. Smith completely at home, we pulled together some of the folks that he knows best, fellow musicians, and we gathered at the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame. Mr. Smith was joined by Michael Lipton, the lead guitar player of the Mountain Stage Band and the director of the Hall of Fame. And at this event, Lipton was with his band, the Carpenter Ants. The idea was simple: play some music, share some stories, and that's pretty much what happened. But the event also turned out to be something of a party.
We heard that there was a birthday in your universe.
Yes, it was. Yesterday.
Well, we want to pay a little tribute to that because we love you.
All right, I'll take it.
We're going to do an old Negro spiritual. It goes something like this. Happy birthday to you. Well, happy birthday to you.
The event kicked off with a celebration of John Smith's 80th birthday. And then the Carpenter Ants launched into a selection of tunes. They were pieces from Mr. Smith's band, The In Crowd, things they might have played on that night back in 1968. That led to some stories about the golden years of the Charleston music scene.
Go ahead and hit it. Let's hear what it sounds like. You guys sound good, I tell you.
Devil with the blue dress, blue dress, blue dress. Devil with the blue dress on.
Charleston rock, to the extent that there used to be river boats that came up to here with music, knowing it. And it wasn't uncommon for them to quit the job on the boat and stay here for 2 or 3 years. That's how great we were in Charleston at the time. And we had musicians here that played on the weekends and at nights when they could, that were comparable to these guys that were coming up here. I'm not taking anything from them, but were coming here on the boat. We had that kind of local ability right here in Charleston. And what I see here from you guys, the music scene among the musicians was just about the same as it is with y'all, you know. You were musicians, so you were automatically included, you know. And we had a certain camaraderie among us that if you were a musician, you were just by default included in it.
Charleston's Triangle District was home to a number of music clubs, and the city's highest concentration of black residents. If you played at a venue there, how different was that than playing at someplace like the Charleston Athletic Club?
It's a difference in rocking and booty shaking. We rocked at the Athletic Club and you booty shook down on Court Street.
So you did different things, say, in Court Street, the black part of town, and it was a little different at the Athletic Club.
For one thing, the songs lasted longer down on Court Street, and it was more energetic. That's what I'm saying. I mean, the band feeds off the audience, and they would make you want to play and make you want to rock on Court Street. The people up at the Athletic Club enjoyed it, but they didn't make you do it. They enjoyed what you were doing. That's the only distinction I could give you. But we were playing, and you know, because we always considered that we rocked the house, just like you guys considered, I'm sure.
At the Athletic Club, it was more people just listening, yeah, as opposed to, I mean, they danced some. But like you, if you're at Court Street, everybody wanted to just let go.
That's Charlie T talking, who sings with the Carpenter Ants. He's a 68-year-old African-American musician who's played gigs in the area for decades.
Well, it depends on which floor you want. Yeah. We've on the third floor, and the sophisticated crowd was on the second. And they had, at that time, I think George Legg had a trio. They were the band on that floor, and we were the band up on the floor above them, which was... It was above, but it was supposed to have been a cut less. If you really wanted to get loose, you come up on the third floor. If you wanted to be cool, then you were on the second. That's the only way I know to describe it. But
also, if you were in town playing and you were black, that's the only place you could stay was the Triangle District.
That's right.
That's Michael Lipton, the Carpenter Ants guitar player and the director of the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame.
That's right. You couldn't get a hotel room anywhere else. You're exactly right about that. There were several places on the west side, too, but I can't remember the names of them. It was every other building had a little nightclub in it. One of them was Higgy's Place, and the big name where you count Basie's and Duke Ellington's and everybody ended up after hours with the Charleston musicians was the Crazy Horse. That was part of the scene I was in. And that's where a lot of guys cut their teeth playing music.
Big city, going to my baby's head. Bright lights.
When we started this, even Charlie referred to that night in 1968. So can you tell us what happened then? What happened at the Athletic Club in 1968?
We were doing the kind of music, and all we did then was like the in crowd and different things like that.
Like Ramsey Lewis in crowd?
Yeah. Grooving and stuff like that. But we were playing, you know, and people were dancing and stuff like that, and coming in and out. Okay, a white gentleman comes in with a black woman. They see them, they dance and everything. A black guy comes in with a white woman. They seated them, and then it's just like they put a sign, like that guy had there saying off limits. Nobody ever came to serve him or drink anything. So we played what we called a set. It was probably 45 minutes. Nobody went over there. And so the four of us, we got to talking and said, well, if they don't soon serve, then we're going to ask the manager why. And so we did. We thought, well, this will break the ice. Joe or Nanny of us, those guys. All right. He told us to get back to work, to play. And so we told him we didn't think we were going to play anymore if it didn't serve him. So he told us to get the hell out. And we did. We left. We packed up and left.
Through the lens of a performing musician, John Smith has a unique perspective on the struggle for racial equality in West Virginia. As he sees it, though, the more things change, the more things stay the same.
really, I don't think it's too much difference now in the attitude of some of the people that come in the club. It's just that you wouldn't get that type of cooperation from the people that run the club now.
Yeah.
Because they would never get a decent band in there again. But at that time, everybody called the shots except the musicians. That's the way it seemed to me. We had like Frank and Thompson and his outfit, Ned Guthrie and them, scraping the cream off the top of the jobs that came into the union, and all type of stuff like was already going on. So really, we were just paying these guys to pour it on us. I mean, that's what I came up with from the way it was, you know. And that's only what I know about it. I'm sure more went on than that. And then at that time, I was more naive, too, so it's hard to tell what they really did to me that I didn't even know happened, which is it's probably best that I didn't know.
Carpenter Ants singer Charlie T says, as a black musician, he's been invited to leave some clubs before.
I've kind of been through a similar situation. I played with a country band for a period of time. And we were playing on the west side at the Eagles. We got invited to play at the Eagles Club. And I just lived down the street at that time. It was coming, I got there early, and the guy let me go upstairs. And then the other guys in the band came and they said, we can't play. And I said, why? They said, well, you know, they really don't want you here. And so I said, okay, I'll just leave. Wasn't a big deal. So anyway, so then they got mad and went down and told the manager or whoever the guy was, they told him, said, if Charlie can't play, we're not going to play. And so they then ended up letting me play. And then we ended up playing there for like several months. So, I mean, but in your situation, it was a very different time.
Yeah.
And the circumstances were very different in a sense.
What year was this?
This was in 1994.
Oh, Lord.
The musicians say racial insensitivity continues today. Again, here's Charlie T.
People have always thought what they wanted to think, but they never verbalized it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, now people just verbalize it. They'll just come out and just say, you know, I don't want this so-and-so, or I don't want this so-and-so, and I don't like this, and I don't like that, or whatever. Rather than sort of keeping it to themselves and sort of grinning and bearing it, now it's just one of the things where you don't care where you go, they're just going to say it.
You feel like it literally has changed. I mean, like, you noticed it. Can you give me that story?
I direct this question to Juby Little, the drummer and singer for the Carpenter Ants.
I remember playing this club one night, and it was a country bar. And they stopped us. They stopped. They said, if you guys don't play any country? And we were like, yeah, we play country, but we do, you know, rock, and we do soul, too, you know, and everything. And, you know, they just completely stopped us from playing, you know. And it was a trip to me because, like, I had been playing and southern rock bands. Those are some of my first bands, fronting them.
You're an African-American band fronting a southern rock band.
Right. And being treated like, you know, like I was just one of them. Then you go to this one place and they show you what you really are. You know, it was a wake-up call.
Yeah.
It was a wake-up call to let you know, you know, you just have to watch what you're doing.
Charlie T has had his own experiences.
Well, I had another situation where Tom was playing at a place down in St. Albans with that same country band.
Uh-huh.
And it was right across the street from where he lived at
that
time.
That was the place I was.
And I came out, he called me the next day on the phone and said, did you play in Circle C last night? I said, yeah. He said, man, they don't even have a black ashtray. He said, get out of there.
Yeah,
get out of
all
there.
The guitar chords weren't black either, were they?
Well, it's funny, like I played there one more week, you know.
Okay.
And came out at the end of the night, somebody like took a brick and hit the front of my car. And like that did my car. And I was like, I'm done.
Well, I'll tell you something that I soon realized as a young man, and it's still true right up to the Trump era. From West Virginia back,
We quit fighting the Civil War and from West Virginia South. They never quit. They surrendered, but they never quit fighting the war. And so that's what you got in every venue that you, I know it sounds crazy, but that's, I mean, it's like a seething undercurrent. And they swore it would rise again. And Trump just took the dirt off probably the soil was just that thick on top of it. He just unearthed it. And that's where we are. I really enjoyed it. I knew this wasn't, it couldn't last. I knew it wasn't going to go forever, but I enjoyed it. I learned a lot, and some of the basics that I learned from doing that music, really, they carried over in the gospel and stuff like that, you know.
Everything happened good to me. God did it.
God did it.
Oh, yes, he did. Well, everything that happened good to me. God did it.
God did it. Oh, yes, he did.
Well, see, once I was down, couldn't get up. Jesus came around, lifted me up. Everything that happened good to me. God did it.
God did it. Oh, yes, he did.
Well,
end of a joyful gathering of music and storytelling, John Smith left us with one clear message. The key to keeping on is gratitude.
God did it because what I just told you couldn't happen if he hadn't did it for me. There was no way in the world that I could play a union gig with a union band and not have a card, please, six nights a week. But I'm telling you, I did it. So God did it, you know. I have to agree with that.
Getting you to come down here and tell us these stories and to have this kind of conversation between the band is everything that I wanted to get today. So I just want to thank you bringing your family and thank you, Carpenter Ants, for playing.
Thank you guys for listening to me. And I think you got a great group myself. I mean, I really am overwhelmed. I hadn't expected anything like this. I have seen you on Mountain Stage, and I'm pleased to meet you and to hear you also. And this type of audience and type of venue, where else would I get this? I couldn't have, there's no way I could have got this. So you talk about being glad. I'm the guy that's glad. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to all you guys. I appreciate you. And if you don't mind, I just want to pick that bass up and hold it.
And this was the most important moment of all. After decades of struggle and experience, John Smith showed us that we all share one thing in common. That we gravitate to the things that bring us joy. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this episode is me, Trey Kay, Kyle Vass, Brad Stratton, and Kate Smith. Thanks to the Carpenter Ants, Michael Lipton on guitar, Charlie T on vocals, Jupy Little on vocals and drums, and Ted Harrison on bass. And special thanks to Paul Flaherty for helping us capture the music of the Carpenter Ants and their conversation with John Smith at the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame. Hey, by the way, There are some great musicians who have come out of the Mountain State, like Bill Withers, Hazel Dickens, Fred Sonic Smith, John Ellison, and Little Jimmy Dickens. If you'd like to know more about this rich history, why don't you go to wvhalloffame.com and learn more. Michael Lipton and Tristram Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo, and Lelena Price provides us with images for the web. The marvelous people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the West Virginia Humanities Council, and the CRC Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independence in Radio. And remember, the key to keeping on is gratitude. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.